Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. Welcome into Soccer Morning. We are ready to go, getting your weekend underway right here with one plus quality hour of soccer discussion. Big stuff lined up for you today. We'll talk to Thomas Floyd from Goal.com at 9:40. Ahead of that, headlines as usual, phone calls, working that in here in the next segment. So get your phones ready. Line yourself up, 347-6, what was the number? Why am I blanking on the number? 756-6276. This goes back to that whole I can't remember phone numbers thing anymore. I need to have it like plastered right here in front of me. I know Trevor's like when I talk about phones, the phone lines aren't open now, but when we do phones, I know Trevor puts the number on the screen. I know he does that. So if you're watching the video, you don't need me to say it. But I think it's probably humorous to watch the video, hear me forget what the number is, and have it be right there on the bottom of the screen. Like, can I do one of those things where I go like this and Trevor makes something appear underneath my hands on the video stream? Yeah. Because I went back and I watched the new graphic package, which Trevor was so excited about this week as we got back on the video after having a couple of weeks off. I saw the new graphic package. It's pretty spectacular. That's good stuff happening over here at Soccer Morning. And that's all down to Trevor Hayward. Let's all give him a round of applause. Trevor Hayward booking all the guests, doing all the graphics. Fantastic stuff. As I said, it is Friday. We are very excited to be here, as usual. Thomas Floyd will come up and talk to us here in a couple of minutes or about half an hour or so. In the meantime, let's hit the headlines. Eric Kubo Torres has joined the Houston Dynamo. He has arrived in Houston. I'm looking at a picture of him pushing his cart through the airport in Houston, beaming, very excited to be there, clearly. Now, remember, Kubo Torres had been delayed in his arrival in Houston due to some legal trouble down in Mexico. There was an allegation of an assault. I'm not sure where that stands. We may have to check in with whatever Mexican legal experts we can find, if there is one available to us, to see what exactly is going on. This is great news for the Dynamo, provided none of that stuff lingers and follows Kubo Torres to the United States. He'll more than likely make his debut on July 21st in the Dynamo's U.S. Open Cup quarterfinal match against Kansas City, and then they'll have the Galaxy the following weekend in the league, so it's very possible Kubo's MLS debut could be against the LA Galaxy, which would be a nice little stage for him. There is a statement here from Major League Soccer. It does address some of the issues that Kubo Torres is facing in Mexico. Let me just scan this briefly. I haven't read through, so I'm going to try. I can't read the whole thing. I'm going to try to get the big points out. Eric Kubo Torres has returned to Major League Soccer after a six-month loan to CD Chivas Guadalajara and has reported to the Dynamo. In light of public reports regarding allegations of sexual assault by Mr. Torres in Guadalajara, Mexico, in April 2015, the league conducted an independent review of this matter. After several months of conducting a criminal investigation, a district attorney for Guadalajara issued an official ruling on June 19th, stating that the evidence uncovered during its investigation cleared Mr. Torres of any criminal wrongdoing. As a result, the district attorney recommended that the investigation be closed. So there you go. I think what we've got here is a situation where whatever happened in Mexico is murky enough, and I'm not absolving Kubo Torres. I'm certainly not saying he's guilty of anything, but this situation has reached a point where MLS is now comfortable with bringing him here, and clearly he's also able to travel and work in the United States. That's something the State Department would have had to have cleared. All right, the MLS Players Union has ratified the new CBA. If you remember, that was lingering for a while. The actual agreement had not yet gone through the process of being ratified. This is a deal that brings forth something approaching free agency, although we know that it's not exactly where the players want to be. But they have, as I said, ratified it. I don't know what that means, but blah, 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 blah. Just a couple of other items from the CBA that you will have remembered from the discussions, but probably forgotten since we started actually playing games. Players earning less than, this is the free agency element. Players earning less than $100,000 can negotiate a raise of up to 25%. Players earning between $100,000 and $2,000 can negotiate a raise of up to 20%. Players $200,000 and above, 15%, et cetera, et cetera. This is, again, players who can move within the league, 8 years of experience, at least 28 years old. It's not the best of terms, but it has been ratified. A couple of MLS trades came down over the last day and a half or so. DC United has traded Luis Silva, the oft-injured really Luis Silva, to Real Salt Lake for Alvaro Saborío. This continues the breakup of the RSL core that had taken them to the top of MLS for a number of years. Now, they still have Beckerman Morales, and they obviously brought back a couple of players in recent times, but Nate Grabovoi is gone, and Chris Wingard is gone, and now that Alvaro Saborío is gone as well, RSL seems to be moving in a different direction. Saborío will not be able to play for DC United until the Gold Cup is over for Costa Rica, which could very well be this weekend. Breck Shea is out indefinitely with a sports hernia surgery. This has apparently knocked him out of commission for a period of time. Not sure exactly how long, 4 to 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. One of those situations where they're not quite sure, and they're not going to rush him back. Breck Shea, obviously not in the Gold Cup team because of these injuries. No timetable was given. Orlando expects him to return by the end of the season. He left a June 24th game against Colorado with an injury. And obviously, this explains partly why Orlando went out and traded for Corey Ash from the Houston Dynamo, a trade that I did not yet mention on Soccer Morning. The Swiss government has agreed to extradite Jeffrey Webb to the United States after his arrest for corruption by the Swiss officials at the behest of the FBI. Former Vice President Jeffrey Webb extradited. The Swiss Federal Office of Justice said Thursday the man was extradited a day earlier after 50 days of detention. He was handed over to a three-man U.S. police escort in Zurich who accompanied him on the flight to New York. Two people familiar with the case, this is from the AP, identified the defendant as Webb and confirmed he has been brought to the U.S. Now, again, he is from the Cayman Islands. He's been CONCACAF president. He actually was living in the United States, was in Zurich for this conference, was arrested, was detained, and now has been extradited to the United States as part of this process. I don't know how many have been extradited. I don't think there's very many at this point who have actually made their way to the U.S. to face the charges that have been brought up against them. Barcelona made $650 million last year. Just think about that number for a second and consider why it is that Barcelona and Real Madrid are never going to give up their dominance of La Liga. Barcelona says they made over 600 million euros in revenue last season when they won a treble of titles, including the Champions League. The European champions say that an audit carried out by an accounting firm, Deloitte, determined the club generated revenues of 608 million euros over the course of the 2014-15 season. Barcelona, as they earned a profit of 15 million euros after taxes during that time. So their profits, not significant necessarily. Their revenues off the charts. You see where things stand in Europe clearly. This is why financial fair play is not going to make any bit of difference when it comes to the big teams and the smaller teams. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, let you get in on a Friday with whatever you want to talk about. Thomas Floyd coming up later in the show. Should be a good one. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. Stay right there. This Saturday, the U.S. men's national team will play in the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup and will be two steps away from reaching the final for the sixth consecutive tournament. Soccer Morning listeners, I'd like to invite you to join me as I'll be sharing my thoughts and opinions during the game live on Rabble.tv. With Rabble.tv, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to me sharing my analysis. With Rabble, you can listen to my broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in too by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. Will Jurgen Klinsmann be able to get this U.S. team firing in all cylinders again? Find out this Saturday, July 18th at 5 p.m. Eastern, and cheer on the red, white, and blue with me live on Rabble.tv.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
We are back on Soccer Morning on a Friday. Are you excited for the Gold Cup quarterfinals? Are you excited for your club weekend, whatever that may mean, whether it's MLS or NASL or USL or hell, if what else is happening in the world? Is like Europa League already starting? What's going on with that? That's not weekend stuff though, right? That's still midweek. Like, I don't know where we stand. Trevor knows like those backwater countries. I mean, no offense to Tajikistan, but like, is Tajikistan in UEFA? I don't even know. That would be in Asia. Where are those little tiny countries way out there on the fringe of Europe who are playing in the Europa League right now? That none of those countries are in Europe. They're all in Asia. But I just mean like way out there on the edge, the Ural Mountains or whatever. I'm getting my geography all screwed up. Let's talk to our friend Landon in Salt Lake City. Landon, your boy's gone. What's going on?
Oh, I know. I called it, didn't I?
I believe you did, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, no, that's the main reason I'm calling in, just to show how good I am.
You want some props?
I called this like five weeks ago.
Okay, well, here's the deal, Landon, and this is something I've been thinking about. I don't have my full sound drop board here on Soccer Morning. I don't know if it would be a nice fit, but since I don't, let's see, what do I have here? I don't have a round of applause. I've got Obama talking about FIFA. I've got Blatter talking about, I got Sepp Blatter and his Ronaldo thing. So there you go. That's going to have to do for a round of applause, or I believe that we have won. You have won the prediction that Alvaro Salvarria would be let go. I mean, certainly traded for something. What do you make of the deal for your side?
Yeah, trying to figure it out. I mean, Luis Silva, he's decent. I mean, it's obviously not a one for one trade. Weibel was talking about it yesterday, saying that they're letting Sabo go to free up some cap space. They're bringing in Luis Silva, and I believe he's very low. So they're saying it's basically a two part trade. They're bringing in a second person right now. We obviously don't know who it is. I mean, Luis Silva for Sabo, I don't think is a really good trade as is. He's fine. He gets injured a ton. Just like, Olave, just like Schuler. I'm not a huge fan of having another guy who gets hurt all the time. What I'm really interested in, though, is who that second guy is going to be. And that's what will show if the trade is worth it or not. Cause right now it's just not.
There is a second. I haven't seen the details. There's a second player involved for your side?
Yeah. So basically, yeah. What Weibel was saying yesterday, and Cassar as well, was that Sabo takes up a lot of cap space. I mean, I think he was in 300 to 400 K a year.
Landon, at some point, wasn't he a DP? He's not a DP now.
Yeah. He's not now. He was a DP, and then he got pulled back this year. This year he was not a DP slot.
Okay.
But he takes up a lot of cap space. So sending him over frees up a ton of that. So they said they were going to bring in Luis Silva as part of it, and that they'll be signing on a second player now and freeing up that much cap space. That player could be, the 2 to 250 range or so. So should be a bigger name. I'm interested to see who it is.
Well, we'll find out what's going on here with RSL. And I guess, again, I mean, the headlines are all going to say that this is part of, planning, that this is long-term stuff. Obviously Luis Silva is a nice player, but he's not going to come in and make a major impact for you. Although, if you get him healthy, if he is healthy, and you line him up on the other side from Joao Plata, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. I just, again, it comes back to the whole being healthy. I mean, we heard the same exact thing when Olave came on. Olave would be great if he's healthy, and he's played like less than 50% of the games this year. And so it's something frustrating to see when we get these players who just can't stay on their 2 feet.
Okay, Landon, I appreciate the phone call. Anything else on your mind? How's your weekend? What you got going on?
Got this weekend on. Just not much. Just watching games and fishing. So it'll be a good weekend.
So you got Houston coming to town for RSL tomorrow, and then obviously it's just a little bit after the USA quarterfinal in Baltimore against Cuba. So you'll have a nice evening of soccer out there in Utah. Appreciate the call, Landon. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks a ton, Jason.
646-832-3909 is your phone number. Jump in here on a Friday. We are leading up to Thomas Floyd from goal at 9:40, so you have plenty of time to get in and talk about whatever is on your mind, whether that's, again, the USA in the Gold Cup quarterfinals against Cuba in Baltimore. What do you need to see? What do you want to see from your lineup? I mean, let's put aside all this notion of progress and blah, 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 and Jurgen Klinsmann's getting it all wrong. What he needs to do tomorrow is win. That's it. Bottom line, just win the game. It's all I'm going to care about. It is the knockout stages of a tournament. If that's the case, what kind of lineup does he need to use? Now, remember, he's changed out three players. His three players that he's changed out, Josie Altidore for Alan Gordon, Greg Garza for DeMarcus Beasley, and Alfredo Morales for Joe Corona. Those three players, he swapped out those three positions, striker, left back, and left mid, or midfielder in general, if you want to kind of throw Joe Corona and Alfredo Morales, who may or may not be a left midfielder for his club and comes into this system, seemed to play okay but not great. Is Joe Corona an upgrade? Is DeMarcus Beasley an upgrade over Greg Garza? I'm not so sure he is, all things being equal, but maybe in this tournament he is. And certainly the experience that DeMarcus Beasley has winning the Gold Cup with the United States could come in handy in this tournament. As for the Alan Gordon Josie Altidore swap, Josie Altidore told the press in Toronto upon his return that he is 80% fit. If that's the case, I'm not sure why he was on the roster to begin with. But now that you've swapped him out, and now that you've heard of Josie say that, I mean, he could be fudging that number, clearly. He could be saying that when it's maybe not true. He could be covering up for his own deficiencies. But if we take it at face value, believe what Josie Altidore says about his fitness, then it makes sense to swap him out ahead of the knockout stages. But is that Alan Gordon? I mean, is the guy that's going to step in and fill Josie's shoes Alan Gordon? Does anybody actually have an expectation of Alan Gordon starting? And here's the thing. It's Jurgen Klinsmann. Alan Gordon could start tomorrow. We don't expect him to. That should logically make it a surprise. But if we get to tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon, in Beemore, and Alan Gordon is on the team sheet to start that game, does anybody really go, wow, I'm really shocked by that? No, you go like this. It's Jurgen. That's so Jurgen. Starting Alan Gordon. Now it's Cuba. Don't underestimate anybody in this tournament. We've seen the United States get in trouble for that already. But it's Cuba. They should be good enough to win, regardless of if Alan Gordon is starting. And I get why Alan Gordon's in this team, by the way. I get why he was on the provisional roster, and I get why he's called up now. He has a very specific set of skills. And those skills mostly amount to being very tall, or tall, and being able to head a ball into the net. Those are the skills Alan Gordon has. He's a big guy. He can play back to goal, center forward stuff for the United States if they need that in a pinch. Over the course of 75 or 85 minutes, I'm not sure you want Alan Gordon on the field that much. I'm not sure that he's good enough to carry that load over the course of most of the game. But based on what we saw from Josie Altidore, he can't really be much of a step back, can he? He can't really be a downgrade from what we saw out of Josie Altidore in those first two games. So now Alan Gordon gets his opportunity to step into a Gold Cup at the age of how many? First of all, if you had to guess, Trevor, do you know off the top of your head how many caps Alan Gordon has? Anybody know? Alan Gordon is unless he plays in this tournament, he will forever be part of that group. That is the one cap club for the United States of America. He has one cap. I believe it came in 2012. He came on as a sub against Antigua and Barbuda, where he played the ball to Eddie Johnson, who scored in the 90th minute to win the game. I remember that game. One of those games that happened on a cricket pitch down in the Caribbean, right? It wasn't going well. It was Antigua and Barbuda. And Alan Gordon had to come on, and he played the ball to Eddie Johnson, who was at the back post and headed it in. He did not play. He was called up for the 2013 Gold Cup, but did not play. That's right. Trevor's remembering. I didn't remember that. This is two consecutive Gold Cups that Alan Gordon has been in this team. Now we get a chance to see if Alan Gordon can get his second cap. He is 33 years old. I feel old because I'm older than him, but he's 33 years old. Maybe he's a good locker room guy, makes a mean margarita. Yeah. Maybe he has a Gordo-rita that he makes. Little muddled cucumber, slice of jalapeno. Sounds like something else somebody I know makes called the Roadie-rita. 646-832-3909 is your phone number on a Friday. I know you're building up to your weekend. You're trying to get things done at work, or you're slacking, because those are the only two ways to go on a Friday when you have an office job, a 9-to-5-er. You either bust your ass so that you can maybe get out early, if you're lucky enough to have an office that allows you to do that, or so that you don't have to come back to a pile of work on Monday, or because there's just a bunch of stuff to clear out, or you don't do a damn thing. You sit back, you relax, you read a lot about soccer, you listen to this show, you maybe play some... Do people still play Minesweeper? Is that still a thing? I feel as though, and again, I haven't been in an office setting in quite some time, but I feel as though every office in America is still running like Windows 95, right? Like, aren't businesses notoriously slow to upgrade? What are we up to in business America when it comes to operating systems? It can't be all the way up. Windows 2000, that's right. That's probably about where we're at. Your operating system is older. I'm saying your operating system has been around longer than, I'm trying to think of something, some soccer reference to make here, than Landon Donovan on the senior national team stage. Your operating system and your office probably came out before Landon Donovan made his senior team debut for the United States of America. Think about that for a second. Think about that. And yeah, you probably are still playing Minesweeper. What else did we have? What's the snake game, right? So the ball's bouncing around and you have to make the lines block off the portions of the box. You see, you have to get up to like 80% of the space in order to move on to the next day. Anyway, 646-832-3909. I had a couple of stories here. One of them is about Miami. Now, it's been so long. The process has been so arduous. There's been no movement in Miami that any story that comes out should be looked at with a critical eye, a jaundiced eye, a very suspicious eye. And this one is no different. Now, let me read you the headline. This is from the Miami Herald. David Beckham group to discuss soccer stadium with Miami mayor. Now, on the surface, that sounds great. David Beckham group to discuss soccer stadium with Miami mayor. We've heard so much about how they haven't made any progress. They haven't had any discussions with the actual elected officials in Miami. This sounds like something good. Guys, let's all get together in a room. We'll hash this thing out. We'll talk about where we can put a stadium. We have any sites that we can identify. I know that University of Miami is involved now. Donna Shalala got in the mix. Let's do this. Let's figure this out once and for all. Trevor says he'll bring some free fragrances for them. It'll be great. He'll bring some of his whiskey. Doesn't David Beckham have whiskey now? David Beckham's a whiskey guy now. He'll bring some Sprint phones. Oh, wait. That's Marcelo Corre, who could bring him some Sprint phones. Maybe David Beckham could throw some of his Spanish at the people in the room who may speak Spanish. But wait a second. There's a catch. Here's your story from Michelle Kaufman and Douglas Hanks. David Beckham and his investors hope to move the ball a little closer Friday in their bid to bring Major League Soccer to Miami. Beckham's business partner, Sprint CEO Marcelo Clore, confirmed he is scheduled to have a video conference with Miami Mayor Tomas Regalado and the mayor's staff Friday morning to discuss the stadium issue. David Beckham will not be at the meeting, which Regalado said would also address a city cellular project with Sprint. Now, tell me if that doesn't sound like we're meeting about some cell phone stuff, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about the soccer thing. And you know what? David won't be here because, you know, he's out selling whiskey and fragrances. and making Sprint commercials, which I've seen 7 billion times at this point. Anything for you, David Beckham? Don't isolate that. Do not isolate that. 646-832-3909. Tell me if I'm wrong about this one. It says video conference. It says Beckham will not be at the meeting. Now, how is this any better than where we were? The meeting comes about a month after Beckham helped revive buzz over his long-sought team when he flew to Miami for a pair of meetings with Miami-Dade Mayor Carlos Jimenez and Donna Shalala, then finishing up her tenure as president of University of Miami. So, Beckham went to Miami. Give him some credit for that. He went to Miami. He met with some people. They have some power. They're individuals with a certain amount of power. But has anything come out of that meeting? There is no indication that Friday's meeting will involve University of Miami, and talks of a joint stadium appear to have cooled. Whoops. In an interview Thursday, Regalado said he hasn't spoken to UM officials since his meeting with Shalala last month, who resigned as president in May. He said UM participation appears to be a crucial element for Beckham's group. UM is the component, Regalado said. Miami Mayor Regalado says that the University of Miami is the component. Stress on the. But let me go back a little bit in this story. Talks of a joint stadium appear to have cooled. Damn it! I've been fooled again. Nothing's happening here. Seriously, this is a story about nothing happening. I don't blame Michelle Kaufman and Douglas Hanks for reporting this. Michelle Kaufman's been all over this story down in Miami. By the way, we tried to get her on the show about 6,000 times. Maybe we'll try again. I don't blame her at all. It's not her fault that nothing's happening. There's a story where there's nothing happening. I mean, there's some sort of meeting. And I know that there's a soccer public in Miami who are desperately waiting for something to really move forward here. But this is in progress. This is a bunch of running in place. And where is David Beckham? Is he really interested? Does he really care? Does he? I don't know if he does. Guys, I don't know if he does. I mean, I'm sure it's one of those things like, you know, it'd be nice to have this. I mean, it'd be fun, I guess, you know, but I'm not really going to I got other stuff going on. I'm not, you know, it's like putting in that barbecue pit in your backyard. It'd be great. Think about all the stuff you could make if you put that barbecue pit in your backyard. Think about how many weekends you'd be out there smoking meat, doing all that really cool stuff, drinking some David Beckham whiskey while you're doing it, talking on your Sprint cell phone, making some barbecue. But, you know, it's a lot of effort to put that barbecue pit in. You know, you don't really have the money to go out, or maybe you do have the money to go out and pay somebody to do it, but you got to line up all that stuff. You got to find the right time. You know, there's kids to consider. They're running around the backyard. You really want, you know, a bunch of guys working, building your pit. Or if you decided to do yourself, I mean, you got to put in some effort here. So it's one of those things like, I would really love this thing, but man, my life is so busy right now. And I've got so many other responsibilities that I can't really justify spending the extra time lining this thing up. That's what it seems like to me. Would David Beckham like to own a Major League Soccer club? The answer to that is yes. How much would David Beckham like to own a Major League Soccer club? It doesn't seem like that much, guys. Really doesn't. Jose on Twitter, can you jump in your ProRail time machine and tell us when we will have MLS in Miami? Man, the it's not the TARDIS, it's the ProRail time machine. I like that. I like that a lot. man, I want Miami to progress. I want things to happen in Miami. Not just because Miami is a cool town and it would bring a certain level of I don't know, fashionability to MLS. And because I know there are a lot of players who would jump at the chance to play in Miami. We might get actual young players on the up who see MLS as a jumping board, or a launching pad, and want to come to Miami. That might happen. But not if they can't get the team done and not if they can't get the stadium together. And all of this comes on the heels of all of the drama in Minnesota. And the latest that I've seen, and we need to get somebody on the show to talk about this. I have been skimming headlines. I haven't read in depth. St. Paul is now in play for the Minnesota MLS team. I don't know what that means. It kind of feels, and this is no respect to St. Paul, and I don't know the geography of the Twin Cities, but it kind of feels a little bit like Sporting Kansas City putting their stadium in Kansas City, Kansas, way out by the Speedway, instead of in Kansas City, Missouri. Now, ultimately, that worked out for Sporting. They get full houses, and that place is amazing. It's a great stadium. Been there myself, so I can say that. It's a great stadium, and really the location doesn't have a whole lot to do with anything. It's fine. Maybe this will work out in Minnesota. And I'm saying this because MLS has screwed up Miami, maybe Minnesota, definitely New York. Well, okay, I'll reserve some judgment on New York for another, what, how many years am I supposed to give them, Trevor? How many years am I supposed to give NYCFC before we start really coming down on putting a team in the city, in the five boroughs? Because, hey guys, we're going to get this thing done. I don't know. Couple of minutes ahead of Thomas Floyd. We'll talk to him at 9:40 ahead of a big soccer weekend. But I want to circle back to the Senate subcommittee hearings involving U.S. soccer, international soccer governance, under the microscope on Capitol Hill on Wednesday. U.S. Senate panel hearing took place to look into corruption in U.S. soccer. They asked for U.S. soccer, corruption in international soccer. They asked U.S. soccer to provide somebody to talk about this problem and U.S. soccer's role in it. They demurred at first, eventually provided Dan Flynn, who is the CEO, Secretary General of U.S. soccer. Sunil Gulati did not attend. Probably a smart move in the end, but certainly not a good look for U.S. soccer. Now, remember that generally speaking, these subcommittee hearings don't do a lot. They don't accomplish a lot. They're mostly about grandstanding. Occasionally, you'll have some actual information come out. I don't believe that any actual information came out of this hearing, but it was an opportunity to hear what Dan Flynn had to say in regards to U.S. soccer's role in any FIFA and CONCACAF corruption, and also to get Andrew Jennings an opportunity to sit in front of a microphone and be Andrew Jennings, which we love. We're going to try to get Andrew Jennings on the show in the very near future. There's some quotes here. In fact, I'm at worldsoccertalk.com. These were written up by Caitlin O'Connell. Good work here, because I've been looking for his transcript. I don't know if I wanted to dive through an entire transcript, but you've got a couple of things. This is what Dan Flynn said about corruption. I knew nothing about any corruption. I or anybody that I work with has not brought anything to my attention. Cold hard facts regarding corruption within FIFA or CONCACAF. Okay. Richard Blumenthal. The silence is deafening, and sometimes inaction signals complicity. There will be a point where, in effect, U.S. soccer is complicit in the ongoing lack of reform or action. You may have no direct control over it, but I respectfully suggest that this may be something you want to consider more seriously. Directing this at Dan Flynn, he says, begin to ask questions, begin an inquiry, begin to shine the light, begin to blow the whistle, begin essentially holding accountable officials who might be guilty, and we now know that they are, of wire fraud, conspiracy, money laundering, and bribery that directly impacted the quality and integrity of the sport you are responsible for upholding. Now, I think that Blumenthal is grandstanding a bit. U.S. soccer doesn't have a whole lot of influence over what CONCACAF or FIFA does, but they have some. And they certainly did stand by. And that's part of the issue. And now here's some money stuff from Mr. Andrew Jennings. Where's Sunil? Where is he? It rather undermines the whole process. U.S. soccer had to know that Blazer and his fellow crook, Jack Warner from Trinidad, fighting extradition now with the approval of FIFA President Sepp Blatter, were looting regional football and evading rightful taxes when they looked the other way. If American soccer leaders had taken action when they should have, Blazer and Warner would have been in jail. Blazer would be seeking asylum in Zimbabwe, and the U.S. would be hosting the 2022 World Cup, not some graveyards in the Gulf. The U.S. doesn't have to go ask the rest of the world, is it all right if we have an inquiry into America, into our people? Please. I find this very dispiriting about this view of America as being gutless, because that's what is being suggested. Get on and do it. Don't ask permission of some other countries. Wow. Andrew Jennings was throwing haymakers left and right throughout this process. He also called for FIFA to be dissolved. He said FIFA should have never awarded the 2022 World Cup to Qatar, and England never should have bid for the 2018 World Cup, knowing about rampant bribery in FIFA's executive committee. I said the same thing about the U.S. and 2026. Blatter's FIFA ticks all the boxes defining an organized crime syndicate, seizing and holding power, massive stealing, running rackets, compromising and outwitting the public authorities, and hiding behind the world's most popular game. After 7 years of probing these sleazebags and putting up with their legal threats and their attacks on my computers. Now, Jennings also said, in the process of this hearing, that, Jennings called out U.S. soccer several times. Let's just put it that way. And again, the senators on the dais made sure to grandstand and make their points. And it did go off the rails, and we lost track of the corruption element, and it became more about equal pay and various other things, which, while important, don't actually have any bearing on what was being discussed. Before we grab Thomas Floyd from goal, let's talk to Roger. What's up, Roger?
Hey, how's it going, Jason? Hey, I just wanted to say I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, but I love the show. I just wanted to say I heard Wednesday West Brom and Orlando played, and Orlando beat them in a friendly 3-1.
Uh-huh.
I just want to know what you know about how are our teams in MLS doing against these mid-table teams throughout Europe?
I don't care. I mean, I'm sorry, Roger. I don't care. It's a friendly, right? I mean, Orlando beating West Brom means just as much as Bournemouth beating Philadelphia. Means nothing to me. I don't put any stock in friendly results on the club level. I mean, I put a little bit more stock in the international game, only because there's so fewer games at the international level. I don't know. I think that it's a red herring. Or a canard, for that matter, to go and look at, first of all, to use these results as indications of anything, and then to start comparing, MLS is championship quality, or bottom half this, and top half that, and hey, if they be in the playoff, I don't think you compare these things. I don't think you can. I think the variables are too much. The travel, the roster limitations, the salary caps, all of those things make it very, very difficult. I think that in a neutral site game, all things being equal, most Premier League teams are going to beat most MLS teams pretty handily. In some cases, the MLS team will compete. It's impossible to know unless you have something serious on the line, and that's never going to happen. We're never going to have Premier League teams and MLS teams going for a trophy that matters to both teams. It's just not going to happen. So it's almost impossible, Roger.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess it's kind of frustrating as, our league, I see it's been improving.
Sure.
And, Jurgen just wants to just kind of diss the league and, keep pushing players to play in Europe.
Yeah.
And I think he should really be supporting the league and really be pushing the league to honor the international dates.
Well, that's true. Okay, Roger, I got to go. But I think I don't think Jurgen Klinsmann has any obligation to prop up MLS. And I think that Don Garber's reaction to Klinsmann's comments last year were ridiculous and out of bounds and insane. Garber's job is to prop up MLS, of course. Klinsmann's job is to win games. If he thinks that that requires his players to be somewhere else, then he should be saying that. I mean, is he right or wrong? I don't know that we can really determine that at this point. All right, let's take a break. We are out of time in this segment. Apologize for cutting it short. Oops, I don't think we've already done that one. Let's do this one. When we come back, it's really loud, we will talk to Thomas Floyd from Goal.com. Don't go anywhere on a Friday soccer morning. WorldSoccerTalk.com. This Saturday, the U.S. men's national team will play in the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup and will be two steps away from reaching the final for the sixth consecutive tournament. Soccer Morning listeners, I'd like to invite you to join me as I'll be sharing my thoughts and opinions during the game live on Rabble.tv. With Rabble.tv, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to me sharing my analysis. With Rabble, you can listen to my broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. Will Jurgen Klinsmann be able to get this U.S. team firing in all cylinders again? Find out this Saturday, July 18th at 5 p.m. Eastern, and cheer on the red, white, and blue with me live on Rabble.tv.
To Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
We are back on Soccer Morning. It is a Friday. I'm very excited for Friday. My next guest is probably excited for Friday as well. Thomas Floyd from Goal is on the line. Let's talk some MLS with Mr. Floyd. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. We've talked to you about the Women's World Cup recently. Imagine we could talk some nationals, a men's national team here in a couple of minutes if we chose to. But let's shift to MLS, and let's talk about the big trade that went down yesterday. Alvaro Salvarillo coming to D.C. For Luis Silva. This is a trade that out in Utah is being characterized as a long-term plan type of trade. In the short term, a big deal for D.C. United and their attempts to win an MLS Cup this year.
Absolutely. This reminds me of the trade D.C. pulled off a few years ago, when they traded Dax McCarty for Dwayne De Rosario, and that turned out pretty much exactly as you would expect. D-Row made a massive impact for DC United as they pushed for a playoff berth. Actually, it was the league MVP, which I don't think they're expecting out of Salvarillo. But then long-term, maybe DC fans regret the fact that they gave up Dax McCarty, who's still excelling for the Red Bulls. So we'll see if that's how this trade goes. Obviously, in the short term, Salvarillo makes DC United a better team. You've got that Espíndola-Salvarillo forward duo that was so successful in RSL. They're reunited. They have the potential to really be one of the more dangerous forward partnerships you'll see down the stretch going into the playoffs as DC really tries to turn, you know, what's been a couple years of success now into a real run at a title. Whereas RSL, you know, it is a deal for the future, but also it makes sense short-term if they can get Luis Silva healthy, because Sebastian Jaime has really been playing very well in that lone striker position where there really wasn't room for him and Salvarillo, whereas mm-hmm. Silva gives you some depth in some other spots.
Now, obviously, Salvarillo on a significant amount of money, and that's part of RSL's thinking, get rid of that salary, open up some space. We'll come to Silva in a second. How does DC, is DC United able to do this almost entirely because of Eddie Johnson's contract being voided?
That seems like a real factor there. As always, it's tough to come to a complete understanding of the real mechanics behind it. I think it's assumed that a portion of the Eddie Johnson cap space also went toward getting Bill Hamid locked down on a new contract that keeps him in DC. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how the Eddie Johnson money was split up. But yes, I think in terms of the cap space, that allows for the Salvarillo move to be made. And also in terms of the personnel, DC now has the target forward that they've lacked all season with Eddie Johnson out.
Yeah, certainly the Eddie Johnson's injury had an impact on DC. They managed to get this far without a center forward, and let's talk about the notion that this can change the way DC United play. Certainly, you have a dynamic forward in Fabian Espíndola who will play off of Salvarillo. Salvarillo is a strong post up type and can get his head on the end of things. Does that free up the midfield to be a little bit more aggressive, or are we going to still see DC United play grinded out soccer because hey, they were built in the image of their head coach?
I think we will continue to see Benny Ball, as some fans have affectionately, or not so affectionately, referred to it. Because Salvarillo, if anything, the way I see it, he makes that style of play even more effective, because DC, you know, when their defenders get under pressure, they'll just lump the ball forward, and and kind of play it safe and just try to chase the ball and grind it out. And with a player like Saborío, that gives you some better hold-up play, that gives you a target who can actually win more of those 50-50 balls and allow United to gain possession in the attacking third on those hopeful balls up the field, whereas in the past, they've been playing with whether it's Silva or Rolf or Panias. Those are all very more technical players who aren't going to win a lot of those physical battles. So Saborío gives them another dynamic, and I think actually helps this style of play be a bit more effective for DC.
Now let's flip this over and talk about it from an RSL perspective. Again, some of this is obviously about getting rid of Alvaro Saborío's salary. The player they get is Luis Silva. He is oft injured. He's one of those guys. He's had some problems with that. He can be a difference maker when he's healthy. Now, he also falls into that category of a four-year college player who came out, made some noise in MLS in Toronto in his first year or two, gets traded to D.C., and all of a sudden you look up and the kid's 26 years old, Thomas. I mean, the window on him developing has closed. Now he's got to be a finished product. What does he give to RSL?
He gives them another option in the attacking midfield slots, which if they can continue to play this sort of 4-3-3 formation they've been using lately, that's important because you need insurance behind Javier Morales because he obviously isn't getting younger and has some injury issues of his own. And it's tough to say what's going on with Luis Gil. It mm-hmm. looks like recently his head hasn't been entirely with the team, and obviously he had that one big high-profile error that led to a late goal conceded against the Rapids, and you wonder if the Silva move has any implications on Luis Gil's future with RSL because they are similar players battling for a similar place in the team, whether that's backing up Morales or trying to be one of the two central midfielders who play behind Morales. So Silva factors into that equation, and if he's healthy, he gives them a very dangerous weapon, and he'll be pleased to be a part of this RSL team because Silva is always adamant that he's a playmaker, not the forward that he often is slotted into. So if they let him play in that midfield with Morales or take the reins when Morales is out, he actually could be a surprisingly effective option for RSL in the short term, as much as this trade appears to be about the long term.
Well, that's also have to cover. I mean, Luis Silva is not going to necessarily do the work as of some of those other midfielders. A lot to consider here. Obviously, this is one of those trades that on paper right now makes sense for both teams. We'll see how it plays out in the end. We had another trade. We actually had a couple of trades recently, but the other mildly high profile trade that happened in the last couple of days, Thomas, is Bakary Soumaré, who was unhappy in Montreal, not getting a lot of playing time recently, asking out and getting shipped to FC Dallas for Kyle Becker. Kyle Becker now on his third team in a very young career, but let's start with Soumaré. I'm not sure. I haven't been overly impressed with him since his return to MLS. I'm not sure he deserves to necessarily just walk in and be a starter anywhere in this league, but what does he bring to Dallas as they attempt to get back on the, on track and head towards perhaps an MLS Cup this year?
He gives them center back depth, which if he is looking to go to a place where he's going to get minutes that he wasn't getting in Montreal, I don't think this is going to work out for him because he definitely will be a backup on the team with Matt Hedges and Zach Lloyd at the center back spot. Mm-hmm. But he does give Oscar Parejas some depth. And I will say, I agree with what you said that since Soumaré has returned to MLS, he just frankly has not been a starting caliber player. And it's interesting to see that he kind of grew so frustrated so quickly over being on the bench for, it was a fairly short amount of time. He only sat out a handful of games for them. And, you maybe ask questions about the persona of a player who, rather than fight for his spot, immediately tries to move on to another team. Mm-hmm. There also was an incident last year when he was with the Fire where he lashed out at a Fire team employee on social media. So all these incidents really make you question if a player like him might be worth the trouble. But I do think a coach like Oscar Pareja is someone who can manage those types of personalities, and he could fit in well with Dallas if he accepts a secondary role with them.
You know, he had some incidents with the Fire the first time around before they ended up selling him to that French club back then. He's just, for whatever reason, Bakari Smari, very sort of hot-headed individual. We'll see. And look, speaking of hot, it's really hot in the summer in Dallas and Frisco, Texas. They're going to be dealing with a lot of travel and schedule congestion just like everybody else. They'll probably need the depth. Whether or not it satisfies Bakari Samari's desire to play remains to be seen. They also have, you mentioned Lloyd and Hedges, the out-and-out starters. They also have Walker Zimmerman in their team. So there's some depth added in Bakari Samari. And the last trade we'll get to before I shift over to some quarterfinal Gold Cup talk, Thomas, is Corey Ash being shipped to Orlando City. This seems to be just cover for the fact that Breck Shea is going to miss some time with that hernia surgery.
Yes, and it will be interesting to see if Ash ends up playing in midfield, which actually was his natural role coming up as a young player before he got converted into the all-star left back that he was with Houston. Orlando's had some bad luck out wide, but Kevin Molino suffering a torn ACL, now the Shea injury. So he gives them more options, and it is surprising that a player like him took so long to find a new MLS team, and that Houston held on to him for so long,
Yeah. Just
kind of stashing him away on the bench when he clearly was an asset that a lot of other teams would be willing to trade some nice pieces for. So
I mean, talk about a player who had a beef about not playing after. I mean, maybe he's a team guy, and I didn't hear anything about Corey Ash being upset about his role in Houston, and yet this is a guy, he's got 200 appearances for the Dynamo over the last 8 years. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, and I mean, as recently as 2013, he was the starting left back for the MLS All Stars, and It's a player, and he was on the Gold Cup team 2 years ago that won the title. He was a fringe U.S. national team player. So the fact that he just kind of got benched because Houston just had DeMarcus Beasley fall into their lap and happened to get the starting U.S. national team left back, I think it does say a lot about his attitude that he's been able to just kind of quietly keep training. From all accounts I've seen, he's been a great locker room guy with the Dynamo, has continued to be so even as a bench player. So I think this is a deal that it works out for him, and it works out for Orlando because they're getting a good presence in that locker room and a player who can really help them as they push for a playoff spot.
So Corey Ash moves to Orlando City. Again, Breck Shea out indefinitely with that sports hernia surgery. That's something that's waylaid a number of players over the course of the last few years. In fact, Jermaine Jones currently dealing with that exact malady as well. Thomas, this is new to me, and I'm catching up here. I did see this morning and sort of blanked on it, but Portland Timbers have signed a DP, 22-year-old Argentine forward Lucas Milano from Lanús, $5 million transfer fee. $1 million a year salary. I don't know anything about the player. I can't imagine that your Comnibol Lanús knowledge is up to par on Lucas Milano. But, you know, what does it mean that Portland is going out? They seem to be one of the more active lower-level DP teams, if you know what I mean. I mean, $1 million isn't anything to sneeze at necessarily, and I guess they are using targeted allocation money in some way regarding this deal. But clearly they have made an effort to mine that Argentine vein for talented players.
Yes, and it's one approach, and it's worked out for them in the past. When you talk about lower level DPs, that's Thiago Chara is a player who was a DP for them, and obviously the player whose contract has been bought down by that targeted allocation money is Fernando Adi,
right?
Who's been a striker for them, who's been sporadically effective, but when he gets on the roll, he can be dangerous. So it's one strategy, and it will be intriguing to see if that works out for them in the Western Conference, where they're competing against the likes of the Galaxy and the Sounders, the teams that are going all out for the big money DPs. We've seen in the Eastern Conference that a DC United team with almost no DP presence, they have a Spindola as a lower level DP, is atop the East by a wide margin. So it can be done, but I imagine it's a bit tougher out west where you're going up against the absolute big money team. So I am curious what this means for Maxi Rudy in Portland. This would appear to bump him down to a kind of a third string striker role, and I wonder if he's an asset they'll look to move. So a lot of implications for Portland as they make this signing.
And lastly, on the MLS fraud, Thomas, just your thoughts of what the official announcement now that that's done. Giovanni Dos Santos signing with the LA Galaxy. We know that the targeted allocation money rule seems to have been designed in part to help a team like LA go and find a fourth DP so they can sign a player like Dos Santos. He is potentially a transformative figure in MLS. In fact, Will Parchman at Top Drawer Soccer calls him the biggest signing in MLS history. Where do you fall?
I'm not quite sure if I'm willing to jump to that conclusion, but it's massive. The fact that MLS gets a in his prime Mexico star in Southern California, it's really it's a demographic the league has been so desperate to tap into, as we saw with the Chivas USA franchise for a decade, attempting to reach those fans. And if the Galaxy can do that, if they can win over a lot of those Mexican fans in Southern California and get them to buy into the franchise, that's another step toward the Galaxy becoming more than just an MLS power and actually becoming a team that can compete in CCL, that can be seen as one of the top clubs in North America, and actually get to the level where they start to be in the conversation as one of those teams that people around the world know.
Yeah, you know, it's going to take winning the regional competition in terms of the CONCACAF Champions League. There's this notion that LA is creating a quote unquote super club. And look, we go back to the Alexi Lalas GM years with that phrase, big S, big C, super club. I don't know that that's possible under the MLS structure. But at least the perception that they're going to be able to go out and do things like this, and you know, this might be the last big signing they have for some time until they maybe sell Omar Gonzalez or something happens with Omar, with one of those older players leaving. They definitely have that vibe about them now. Is that good for MLS?
I think it is good for MLS because when you look at teams around the world, or leagues around the world, they're largely judged by their super clubs, as you put it. You know, people don't really talk about La Liga being top to bottom a, you know, fantastic league. Even if it is, they notice that Barcelona and Real Madrid play there. So as these MLS teams like the Galaxy, like potentially the Sounders or even NYCFC, reach that level, I think it's only good. It's only a good thing for MLS as it tries to grow its brand.
You know, I'm looking at Matt Doyle's breakdown of what LA needs to do now with Giovanni Dos Santos in the fold when he arrives early August. This is just, you know, we don't necessarily have to comment here, Thomas, but I just think it's interesting to point out this starting 11 that he's got as one of the likely lineups for LA. Robbie Rogers at left back, Omar Gonzalez and Leonardo in the middle, A.J. De La Garza on the right, Janino in that defensive mid role, Giovanni Dos Santos, Steven Gerrard, and Sebastian Legette across a midfield trio, Robbie Keane and Jossie's artists up top. That's pretty insane in an MLS context.
Yes, that's simply ridiculous. You look at that lineup and it's something else. It's something that we haven't seen in MLS, that a team that has that much star power, that much balance. I wonder if a guy like Leonardo is in there like, oh, how'd I get into this group? But it's a lot of fun to just ponder what the Galaxy could look like with that 11. It should be just one of the most entertaining teams, if not the most entertaining team we've seen over the course of these 20 years with MLS.
Yeah, I'm just taking stock here. You've got a couple of Mexican Americans, a couple of Brazilians, an Englishman, an Irishman. Zardes is American, you know, obviously, Giovanni Dos Santos, as I said, Mexican, Robbie Rogers, American, Legette with his heritage. It's across the board of a very interesting team. And there's actually some depth in on the bench as well. Dan Gargan and several other players, Alan Gordon, Badjo Husidic, who's going to be the guy that misses out now. Let's turn to the national team quickly, Thomas, before I have to let you go. The United States preparing for a quarterfinal match against against Cuba in Baltimore tomorrow afternoon. Cuba is not good enough to beat the United States. That's a flat-out fact. If the United States plays up to their relative abilities, the question is, are they going to get there? And what do you not what do you expect necessarily? Because I imagine Cuba's going to try to come out fast. They're going to try to pressure the United States with their speed and athleticism. Does the United States need to play a team that is possession heavy? I mean, what do we see here?
I mean, I think the U.S. is just going to really come out with maybe the more dynamic lineup that has a guy like Zardes or Yedlin out on the flank and see if they can beat Cuba a couple different ways. Obviously, they're going to have the lion's share of the ball, but they're playing a team that's going to be packed in the final third. So you want a difference maker who can, crack an opponent in the opposing area, like the way Jossy Zardes came off the bench and did so against Haiti in the group stage. So, I don't think it's going to be the most tactically complex game. I just think Cuba is going to try to hang on for dear life and probably pack it in. And, we'll see if the U.S., if they can get an early goal, then this game will open up and we might see something ugly like when Mexico played, Cuba in the group stage. If not, we'll see. Cuba's played the U.S. tough in the past. They actually took the lead on them 4 years ago in the Gold Cup. So nothing's impossible, but this does have the makings of what should be a comfortable U.S. win.
Thomas Floyd at goal.com. You can go read his stuff over there. I believe it's Thomas. I want to say Thomas Floyd 10. Is I getting that right? I don't remember Twitter handles very well, Thomas.
That is correct.
Boom, there it is. It's off the top of the dome piece. Thomas, enjoyed it. Appreciate your time. And have a good soccer weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
There goes Thomas Floyd. Let's wrap up this edition of Soccer Morning on a Friday. Thank you very much for listening and for calling in and for participating and for being on Twitter at Soccer Morning and for following us on Facebook at facebook.com/soccer morning, which I need to dive into a little bit more. What else am I missing here? We got the T-shirts over at backheel.com/store with the mugs over there as well. There's Soccer Morning T-shirts somewhere on the internet. We're still trying to determine where those are exactly. I had a good week with you guys. It was fun. We had a good time, right? And we'll be back next week. Slew of good guests talking about the U.S. in the quarterfinals, the Gold Cup in general, Mexico, Costa Rica this weekend. Boom, that's a big one. Should be fun there as well. I'll be on Rabble.tv, by the way, for USA Cuba tomorrow. So make sure you're looking out for that. Rabble.tv. I'll tweet the link from Davis JSN and we'll have it from Soccer Morning as well. I'll be doing commentary during the game. Should be fun. I couldn't make it up to Baltimore, so the second best thing is to do that. Thank you very much for listening. That's it. It's in the books, and we'll see you on Monday. Later.